For the Southwest, it's Triple M this morning, and oh boy, have I got a storyteller on the line for you. Her name is Tana Douglas, and she was the world's very first female roadie, and she came from Australia. Good morning, Tana. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Angie. Thanks for having me.
So the book is called Loud. Congratulations. I've had a read of it, and what a tale you tell.
Well, good. I'm glad you're excited. It's that was the goal. The goal was to get it out there and give people a different perspective of what really happens during a concert while the concert's going on. And, you know, it's not just the artists up on the stage. There's a bunch of us running around in the background doing stuff. And that continues on after the show and before the next show. So there's a whole world there.
And the roadies are like sort of rock stars in their own right. And when you sort of got into the industry, number one, roadies wasn't even like a recognised thing as of yet. It was just sort of all coming out. The technology was changing. The PA systems were getting bigger. You were the only chick. And it would have just been like the probably one of the most bizarre fields to find yourself in. Did you have any inkling as a 16-year-old as to what was to come?
I was just travelling around because that's what I'd done since really early childhood. We'd moved from town to town to town. And so after I ran away from home, I just continued sort of doing that. It was kind of my natural thing to do. And, you know, I was looking for some sort of family unit, you know, and I found it in the most unexpected, unlikely of places, which was with, you know, a bunch of rowdy road crew. You know, they always had, you know, they had a reputation for being rough and gruff and, you know, brawling and, you know, various other things, you know. And they took me in and I fit in well and became one of them and worked hard and they kept me. So it was good. It was good all around.
And not even the only family that you found, because what blew me away, because I heard your name and a little bit about your story in another book that came out a couple of years ago called Roadies, and it was The Secret Histories of Australian Live Music Scene. And that was fascinating. But I think what your book has done is it tells more of a full story. Roadies was a snapshot, whereas you get the whole Tana Douglas extravaganza in Loud. And what blew me away was the intimacy of a very, very famous, very loved band that we feature heavily on Triple M. And that is when they were completely unknown, just a couple of brothers playing music and later became AC/DC.
Yeah, well, they were AC/DC. It was just a very early format. You know, they'd done a couple of shows around Sydney and even a couple in Adelaide and one in Melbourne with a different lead singer. But this was the union that brought Bon Scott into the mix. So this was the one that the AC/DC that launched itself on an unsuspecting world. So it was a good time to be there, actually. Yeah.
And you lived with them in a house which was a bit of a den in Melbourne. And it was through that crazy time where the tour circuit took off. How did you keep up?
Oh, well, you didn't have a choice. If you didn't keep up, you got left behind. you had to. You know, the work ethic was just astronomical with that band. You know, it was do what you have to do, do it, you know, as well as you possibly can, and let's move on to the next one and let's keep going, because they were on a mission from day one. You know, Malcolm had this vision that, you know, this is what it's going to be, and we're going to work hard, we're going to work hard, we're going to continue working, and we're going to make it. And, you know, he never wavered from that, ever.
And what do you think about them now, still releasing music all these years later, even just last year?
Oh, you know, I love it. You know, more power to them. You know, it's nice that they did it, you know, as a bit of an homage to Malcolm. I found that really touching. And, you know, I caught up with them not so long ago, before Malcolm died, actually. And it was great to see them. It was just like stepping into old shoes and you know, we just chatted and hung out. And, you know, I rode down on the bus with Malcolm and Angus to the show that they did in San Bernardino, just outside of Los Angeles, and the day before, you know, when they got inaugurated into the Rock Walk in Hollywood. So, you know, I got to spend some good, valuable time with them, and it was nice. You know, there's no egos there. They're just good folk.
And that's something that's quite remarkable about AC/DC, obviously one of the most some of the most biggest musicians on the planet. And like you said, no ego. Do you think they've changed at all?
You know, I don't think so. You know, maybe mellowed a little.
Wow, but, we would hope so.
But that happens. That happens to the best of us, exactly. So, no, I mean, you know, they've still got that blinding work ethic, you know, and they're going to give it their best, and they're going to do it, and they're going to think of their fans, and just keep on rocking, you know. So, more power to them.
Now, you've got such an amazing list of shows and bands that you've toured with. Pearl Jam, Chili Peppers, Status Quo, Elton John for 4 years. Was that a roller coaster?
That was a roller coaster, yeah. It was a difficult time for him. It was a difficult time for all of us, actually. It was, it was in the early 80s, and there was a lot of illicit stuff going on, and you know, he does like to throw a good bash. He does like a party, Mr. John. So, you know, he'd go for it. And, you know, what happens is what the band's doing trickles down to the crew. You know, whatever's going on at the very top, it trickles down to us, and we act accordingly, which is not always behaving ourselves.
I like, you know how people have that, like, you know, conversation starter where they say, if you could invite 5 people over for dinner, who would it be? I reckon some of the people that you've hung out with on a daily basis for a number of years would be on the top of that list. So who would you invite for dinner if you could just have 5 people from past, present, future, just around the table?
Past, present, and future. Let me see. Gosh, you're throwing this one at me.
Oh, sorry.
I'd have Janis Joplin, because she inspired me in the very early days in the beginning, and she left us way too soon. So I'd definitely have her there. I'd have Keith Richards, just because I think it'd be hilarious. see if he makes it through the meal. And who else have we got? Gosh.
Because you've met them all. This is why you're struggling.
yeah, you know, I mean, maybe George Harrison, to see how his life turned out outside of the papers and the coverage, you know, because that was a good meeting there, you know, so we'd have him along. And, you know, I think we'd have to throw in a comedian or two, you know, just to lighten it up a bit. So not quite sure. What's that Australian comedian? He's quite funny.
Jim Jefferies? Jim Jefferies.
Jim Jefferies. Yeah. We could throw him in for a laugh. And then maybe, I don't know, an exotic dancer or something, just to mix it up a little bit.
Well, keep one seat for me, because that sounds like one hell of a party. You've got some fantastic anecdotes in this book. I cannot mention enough. It's called Loud. You should read it immediately. One of them that I've come across that I can't imagine being in the situation that you found yourself in, but you were 21 years old and you end up having a tantrum at Iggy Pop.
A tantrum? I thought it was well-founded.
Oh, well, it was, but it was, you know, like...
Totally justified. I did spit my dummy, you're right.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, we were doing a show at the Music Machine in London, you know, and it was the last 4 shows of the tour. So, you know, and I was living in London at the time, and you know, we're doing the first of these last group of shows, and I'm out at the front of house lighting position, and house light gets called a black, so you know the audience is all yelling and cheering and expecting Iggy to walk on stage. Boom, you know, that's how it's meant to work. Magic, there they are, but nothing happens, and it's like, And then I get this call over the intercom, saying, Tani, you've got to go to the dressing room. Iggy needs you in the dressing room now. And it's like, wait, what? No, he's supposed to be coming to the stage, not the dressing room. What's going on? And it's like, you've got to get up there. He won't come out of the dressing room. So it's like, oh, for God's sake. So I have to fight my way through the whole crowd, drag myself up on the stage, run up the stairs, and all this is like in this punked out, sweaty club. It was like, who knows, 120 degrees by that point. And I've got my leather jacket on. So we run in, I'm banging on the door. All these people are outside thinking it's a great thing. You know, there's record company people freaking out. His manager's freaking out. Everyone's like, you've got to get him out of the dressing room. You've got to get him out of the dressing room. I'm like, oh, God, why me? I'm banging on the door. He opens the door, sees me, and he grabs me and pulls me in and shuts the door and locks it. It's like, what are you doing? Stop it. We've got to get you on stage. You're supposed to be, yeah, hang on, hang on, hang on, he says. I want you to meet someone. It's like, oh, God. And he's holding it. Can I say this on radio? He's holding this mirror with white substance on it, and there's three of these white substance things on it. and he does one, and then he passes it to me, and he goes, "I want you to meet someone. I want you to meet someone." And he goes, and there's some guy standing in the corner, and I'm really not paying any attention because I'm really upset at this point. I'm a little pissed with Iggy. It's like, we've got to get on stage now. You know, he's gone, hang on, I just want you to meet. And so I was upset with whoever this person was. So I did both of these lines. And then just as I did the second one, he's gone, I want you to meet Bowie, David Bowie, this is Tana. And I'm like, oh, God. And so I just went, oh, and gave him the mirror of the note and ran away with Iggy, grabbed Iggy and ran off to the stage. So, yeah, so that's how that happened. And then, of course, I was all hot and sweaty and I had to fight my way back through the crowd. So I took my leather jacket off and just stuck it under the monitor desk. And he grabs it, wears it on stage, and then ends up throwing it into the audience by mistake. And it's like, no, my jacket.
Yeah,
it wasn't a good day, really.
Justified tantrum.
I did throw a tantrum.
Yeah, completely justified.
After the show.
And what a way to meet David Bowie.
Well, yeah, he probably thought I was crazy. He's like, God, who's this woman? Jesus Christ.
You know? Do you know what? I'm starting.
Stay away from her.
Yeah,
she's crazy.
Right? I'm starting to piece together where some of the traveling Australian stereotypes or ideas came from. You were trailblazing that from the highest level.
Yeah, you know, that's just how it goes, isn't it?
On the other side, obviously, there's some amazing moments, some difficult moments. You're kind of half a minder, half a security guard, a very specialized skilled technician that was making it up as they went along, as all the best people do in their jobs. But on the other side of things, roadies in the last 12 months, I mean, Jesus, been tough.
Yeah, it's not good. It's all over the world. It's really just bad. You know, most countries, they don't qualify for unemployment benefits or anything, you know. So there's a lot of people that have been incredibly hard hit. And, you know, the sad thing is, you know, we're the first ones to stand up for any benefit, you know, if it's a Live Aid benefit or, you know, feed the hungry or whatever it is, you know, the fire relief, you know, all of those things. It's road crew that stand up first and work for free. We don't get paid for any of that and we don't ever want to get paid for any of that. We figure it's our contribution, you know, but right now, you know, we're hurting a lot, you know, so, you know, there's road crew all over the world that are leaving the profession because they can't afford to wait it out. So they're getting other jobs and it's really sad. We're losing a lot of good people, you know, and that's not even considering, you know, people who have been affected by COVID directly, you know. So, you know, we've just got to hope that everything gets back on track. I don't see it happening before 2022. But hopefully I'm wrong, you know, because that's a whole other year we've got to get through, you know.
There's a great Australian charity called Support Act that is supporting people in that position in a various different ways. So if you want to know more about that side of things, because if there's no road crew, there's no touring. If there's no touring, basically there's no bands. And, you know, what a sad day that would be.
Yeah, I do as much as I can with Support Act. They're a wonderful organisation and Crew Care is another one, you know, so... Yeah, they're both two great Australian organisations that I strongly support.
Before sort of the world went upside down with the whole C word that I'm definitely not going to say on radio, do you still just enjoy finding a small local band and sitting in the back and watching a performance?
Oh, yeah. You know, I love new talent. I'm always looking to see what's coming up through the ranks, you know. It's I love it sort of when it's rough and at its rawest and they're young and they're just finding their way. You know, that to me is a really exciting time in any artist's career. So I always look out for that. You know, that's something that, you know, I've always loved. You know, going back to AC/DC, you know, in the house, you know, sitting around and listening to them writing songs and stuff. You know, it's a strong part of it for me. It really is. You know, so, you know, whatever's out there, you know, and I don't just listen to one type of music. I'll listen to all sorts of music. You know, it's got to be good. But, you know, but I won't sort of limit myself by saying, oh, I'm not into industrial or, you know, that's too heavy or whatever. I'll give it a listen, you know, and if it's good, I'll listen to it again, you know.
And if you could go back and tour with any of the bands that you've been with before at a particular time in history, where would you go to?
Where would I go to? You know, I'd probably go to Status Quo at the peak of their time, which was the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. They were just on such a roll and they were just having such a good time. You know, they're a bunch of good guys. They're really nice people. They're unpretentious, and they always included us in all sorts of things. So, that to me would be a pleasure to revisit. Yeah.
I could speak to you for hours, but I better let you go, Tana. Thank you so much for your time and just thank you for putting it all down into a book for music frothers like myself that, just love every angle of it, how it all comes together and the magic that it really actually puts into the world. And thank you so much for sharing your story in such a great way.
Oh, it's my pleasure. That's the best thing. Just turn up and get loud, guys.